Manx Radio's update with Beth Espy.
Well, first of all, good evening. It is Tuesday, the 1st of July, and this is Update, where you can just catch up with all the news that's been happening today. So coming up before 5.30, we're going to be talking live to a teaching union about their plan to ballot members on strike action. As a second government listening to you roadshow set to get underway in half an hour, we'll hear how the Ramsey one went last night. Also, the island's largest public sector employer has published its annual report. We'll take a look at some of the main headlines. And as we continue our countdown to the Island Games, we find out more about the archery team that will be competing this year. As ever, we'll look at the traffic and the travel, the weather as well. And if you'd like to get in touch, you can email the studio, studio@manxradio.com. We'll start with the main news headlines with Siobhan Fletcher, Fastamai.
Fastamai. The Department of Education says it's committed to finding a fair and sustainable resolution with school leaders on the island. It's as the NAHT says a formal postal ballot will open from Monday the 7th of July to Monday the 11th of August amid what it describes as a dispute with the island's education department. The second of government's roadshows will get underway at 5.30 this evening, this time at Ballacamine High School. Chief Minister Alfred Cannon told Manx Radio last night that the ministers never really know what's going to crop up.
There's no dress rehearsal for audience questions which are simply unpublished before you actually hit the stage. So, you know, I think the questions were relevant, and I hope that the ministers were able to give the answers that were being sought, or the reassurances that were being sought, or...
A drop-off in numbers of those watching the Tynwald Day ceremony from the grandstands has prompted organisers to take action by cutting the length of the tiered seating available. The president of Tynwald says the trend of fewer people going along to watch has been noticeable over recent years. And a dog who spent 5 weeks in Archalligan Plantation has finally been brought home. Elvis, the German Shepherd Cross, slipped his lead in the area on the 28th of May. Further afield, three senior leaders at the hospital where Lucy Letby worked have been questioned over gross negligence manslaughter claims. The nurse was convicted of killing seven babies and trying to murder seven more at the Countess of Chester. England's had its driest first half of the year since 1976, with Met Office figures showing an average of 273 millimetres of rain. And in tennis, two home players haven't made it through their first round matches at Wimbledon today. Heather Watson and Johannes Munde couldn't quite do enough to keep the local fans happy. They're your headlines, news at 6.
Thank you very much indeed, Siobhan. Now the weather brought to you by Manx Glass and Glazing. Staying dry this evening, becoming brighter actually as the cloud cover thins. The night is going to be dry and clear, moderate or fresh northwest winds, and lowest temperatures tonight will be around 10. Tomorrow, a fine and dry day. Lengthy sunny spells. Those winds will turn to the west and ease, light or moderate. Maximum temperatures tomorrow around 18. And again, for Thursday, dry for much of the sunny day, and it will be sunny at first, but it'll turn cloudy later with perhaps a little patchy light rain by the evening. Sunset this evening, 9.54. Sunrise tomorrow morning, 4.50.
Manx Glass and Glazing can supply and install single, double and triple glazing. Call 674 573, or visit the showroom on the Snugbrough Trading Estate.
TE Cabin provide new memorial stones, grave renovations, new inscriptions and fire hearths. Visit us at Hope Street, Castletown, or at Broadway Douglas, or call 844-440. TE Cabin, here when you need us.
At Bond Fabrics, we're not just a fabric shop. As well as curtains and upholstery and dress and costume fabrics, we've knitting and crocheting wools, made-to-measure curtain and blind service, plus poles and tracks. Visit Strand Street, Douglas, call 611-856 or see bondfabrics.in.
Most builders start with a hammer and saw. Manx Construction start with ideas and imagination. For new build, extension or home office, Manx Construction offer full service from planning to completion. Call Tony on 452 688.
If you have children, pets or a house, talk to Peace of Mind about a will or power of attorney, which will help family members when it matters. Prices from £199 plus VAT. Find us on Facebook or call 632 610.
You're You're listening to Update here on Manx Radio, 4:05 past 5. Now, an MHK says he believes the public doesn't know what the Chief Minister's priorities are. You might know that the Douglas Central MHK, Chris Thomas, was on Agenda last night, and he said he believed government had been policy directionless. He also argued that there is now more political experience across the island's local authorities than there is in the House of Keys, and said the whole system needed a shake-up at the next election.
I believe the Chief Minister, to an extent, is a prisoner inside his own Council of Ministers, and there are issues on which I don't believe he agrees with the Council of Ministers' position, and local authority reform was always going to be a touchy issue in the northern parishes. It's obvious that there's going to be kickback with the idea of rates burden being imposed on people by a Department of Infrastructure diktat. I'm criticising Council Ministers for not having paid attention to the detail, and I'm saying it doesn't seem to be a completely joined up and unified Council Ministers at the moment.
I mean, that's an extraordinary thing to say, that you think the Chief Minister is a prisoner in his own council.
He appoints people, he can remove people. That is a ministerial grade. Obviously, departmental members are a collective responsibility for the Council Ministers. So, you know, when I said first time that he was a prisoner in his own Council Ministers, the context was he'd made me departmental member into the Department of Health and Social Care. And then a couple of weeks later, Council of Ministers asked me to step down, or told me to step down as departmental member in the Department of Health and Social Care. So that's when I coined the phrase, he's a prisoner in his own council ministers. I think we've seen that more with 20 mile per hour limits, with approach to energy, with approach to housing. You know, we have two different clear political factions inside the council ministers and inside Tynwald. There are lots of variations on them. It might be argued that in the last 15, 20 years, we've always had chief ministers who've had to rule with different points of view inside their council ministers. Fair point. But there was a general consensus about the direction we're going in. And if you just ask basic questions in the island at the moment, I don't think it's clear which way the chief minister wants to go.
That is the Douglas Central MHK Chris Thomas, who was speaking on Agenda last night. You can listen back to that full programme as a podcast at manxradio.com. And we should say we have asked government if they have any response to what Mr Thomas had to say there. 5:07. Now, a school leaders union is going to ballot its head teacher and deputy head teacher members on the Isle of Man about whether to take industrial action amid a dispute with the island's education department. The NAHT's senior leadership on the island backed the move to a formal ballot in an indicative electronic poll a few weeks ago that followed a unanimous recommendation by the union's Isle of Man executive at an emergency meeting. Now, we should say here, we did ask the Department for Education for their response to this, and they've told us the department is aware of the union's intention to ballot its members on industrial action. Our priority remains working constructively with the union to resolve the dispute and to avoid any disruption to pupils, parents and schools. Discussions, the department says, are ongoing, and we remain committed to finding a fair and sustainable resolution. Well, we're joined on the line now by the Assistant General Secretary of the NAHT, Rob Kersall. Good evening, Mr. Kersall. First of all, you've said this wasn't a road you wanted to go down. Would you be able to tell us what specific events have really tipped the balance and are forcing the union to consider taking what is a drastic step, potentially?
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, this is a road that we didn't want to go down. And of course, taking action is always a last resort. But I have to say that at every point of our contact with the Isle of Man government and in the talks we've had with MERS, the Industrial Relations Service, it seems that, you know, despite us making some progress or one step forward, it seems to be that we're taking, or the Isle of Man government are taking, three steps backwards. It beggars belief, actually, that this dispute now has been rumbling on for over a year. We've seen school leaders who've been forced out of their schools on, my words, trumped up charges, where there's been external investigations which have found no case to answer. Yet to date, those colleagues have not been returned back to their school. And indeed, the continuing pattern of behaviour by the Department for Education continues. And that, again, is something that is wholly regrettable. We actually thought that Bierman's report in 2010 had inappropriate behaviours and toxicity that existed within DESC, but it seems to me that that is clearly back now on the agenda, which is forcing, as I say, school leaders to take this significant step.
No, sorry, Rob, we are losing you a little bit on the line there, but hopefully we'll be able to keep the conversation going. I think it's fair to say parents and pupils are going to be pretty alarmed to hear of this potential strike action. And I wonder how you can justify this step when it could disrupt schools. And clearly, as the department have told us in their statement, they are willing to try and find a resolution without the need for that.
Yeah, well, the last thing school leaders want to do is to cause any disruption to pupils, to carers and their communities. They hold dear the sense of purpose they have as school leaders. So this is a situation that none of us want to find ourselves in. And of course, if we're forced into taking action, of course, we'll look to minimise any disruption to the learners. But I have to say, this dispute and the resolution of this dispute lays firmly at the feet of the Minister, of the Department for Education, Skills and Culture. And we see attempts for us to try and resolve this being thwarted by incompetence every which way that we turn. And that has to come to an end.
What would a fair and reasonable solution look like to you then?
Well, first and foremost, we want to see those colleagues who was forced out of their schools. In fact, a year ago today, the 1st of July 2024, who following an external investigation has found there's been no case to answer, those colleagues should be returned back to their schools and to carry on the great work that they continue to deliver for their community. We also want to see a wide-ranging investigation of the very serious allegations that have been raised regards to the toxicity and the culture within the Department of Education, Schools and Culture. Of course, they're the elements of which we can hopefully. So, as I've said, we've been in intense talks now for over 3 weeks to try and find a way forward. But it seems every which way that we turn, there are too many steps taken back by the department.
Oh, again, sorry, Rob, we do keep losing you a little bit there. So we'll just bring a final question in, I suppose. You're saying that every which way you turn, you're not getting the answers you want. I mean, would it be fair to say, are you actually willing to compromise on anything here?
We've been looking to find a resolution to this. I don't think there's any compromising to be done in many respects. In course, what we're faced with is behaviours by the department which are contradiction of the very values in which our children are taught in our schools. Fairness, honesty, respect and accountability. They're the very standards by which we should be operating. So that again is you know, down to the department and the government of the Isle of Man to come and work with us and with school leaders across the Isle of Man to find a resolution to the current impasse that we find ourselves in.
Assistant General Secretary of the NAHT, Rob Kersall, thank you very much indeed for joining us this evening. 12 minutes past five now. The island's farmers need to be there for each other when it comes to looking after their mental health. It's the opinion of Philip Hampton, and he owns Bigfoot & Sons Agricultural Contractors. He works on farms across the island and says it can be a really isolated industry to work in. Philip's been talking to Simon Clark.
It's funny, really. Mental health is quite a thing that's on quite a buzzword at the moment, it's on a lot of people's minds. And when you're stuck out in a tractor on your own mind can be a very lonely place at times. I mean, I tend to just turn the radio up a lot louder and maybe sing or something, like, you know, I may look pretty stupid and I'm a pretty crap singer, but it keeps you sane maybe for the day. And I think it's a thing that we have to be very careful of, because there is people that are struggling, and we can make a lightheartedness of the dry weather and things like that, but it really does affect people. And if people are affected by it, they should reach out for help. I mean, a good friend of mine and yours, Simon, Nicola Kerfey, she's just set up a new venture called I'll Stand for Suicide, which is a great thing. And they've been going around and they're looking to get in contact with groups and things like the Young Farmers and various groups, and they will tell you how to look out for the signs of people that may be suffering from depression and things like that, which can only be a good thing if we can look out for one another.
That is Philip Hampton, who owns Bigfoot & Sons Agricultural Contractors. And you can hear more from Philip on Countryside tonight. It's coming straight after Update here on Manx Radio at 5:30. Such an important subject to be talking about. It is coming up to 14 minutes past five.
Manx Radio Travel, driven by Quayside Tyres and Service Centre.
So with regard to roadworks, it's pretty much the same things that were there this morning. Temporary lights on Victoria Road in Castletown. In Colby, there are temporary lights on the Colby level. Peel, temporary lights on the Glen Faber Road. That's near the new sewage treatment plant for service supply work. And there are also temporary lights on the new Castletown Road near Mount Murray as well. Nothing that we're aware of on the police pages tonight, and all looking good down at the airport and the steam packet as well.
Ask how you can spread the cost interest-free at Keyside.
Now, the Isle of Man's largest public sector employer has published its annual report outlining how the government's workforce has changed over the past year, along with some of the key challenges and reforms. Well, Christian has been looking through the findings and joins me now. Christian, just start us off with the headlines.
Pass to my Beth. Well, overall, staff numbers are up. The Public Services Commission employed just over 4,276 full-time equivalent staff by the end of March. That's an increase of up by more than 130 on the previous year. And Manx Care remains the single largest employer within that group with over 1,100 full-time equivalent roles.
Is there any indication about what's driving those changes then?
Well, the report suggests a continued shift towards part-time and flexible working. Nearly 1,000 of the FTE posts are now part-time, and women make up nearly 59% of the total workforce. The average age has also crept up to 46, prompting a focus on succession planning to maintain long-term service delivery.
So what about recruitment and retention?
Well, there were more starters than leavers, but voluntary resignation remains the top reason for people leaving, followed by retirement. Interestingly, though, the government still doesn't have reliable data on where those leavers go, as exit interviews are actually voluntary.
And what about sickness absence? Because that's often something that's a talking point.
Well, it's improved slightly. The number of days lost down to around 56,950 in years. That's 156 years, but it's a drop of nearly 4%. But the overall rate of absence is still fairly high. 5.3% of working time was lost compared to 2.9% in the UK public sector. That said, though, around a third of staff actually recorded no sick leave at all.
And in this report, then, are there any major HR changes or other initiatives highlighted?
There's a few. The Office of Human Resources launched a new performance development framework and continues to work on a longer-term people strategy. It's also responding to rising demand for coaching, mentoring and counselling, with two counsellors now on staff and expanded welfare support for public-facing roles.
And what about whistleblowing or any integrity issues?
The number of complaints to the public service integrity line actually dropped this year, down from 41 to 27, most related to HR issues, though there were some passed to the audit advisory division. There were also 13 formal whistleblowing cases across the public sector, covering a range of serious concerns from health and safety to alleged criminal activity.
And just finally, Christian, are there any final comments from the Commission?
Well, the chair, MHK Rob Callister, also an Onken member, says the report shows ongoing efforts to modernise, improve transparency and ensure the public service remains performance-driven and prepared for future challenges, especially in the face of legal, economic and technological change.
Christian, thank you very much indeed. 17 and a half minutes past five. Now, it's the focus of our national day, the occasion which underlines the independence of this small island. But quite noticeably, in the past few years, the numbers taking seats on the specially erected grandstands running alongside the ceremonial way on Tynwald Day at St John's have diminished somewhat. And indeed, this year they are actually taking that into account because less grandstanding has been put up there. Here's President Lawrence Skelly.
What we've seen here is that we've accommodated the three grandstands for many a year, but failed to actually fill them up. So now it was a decision made to reduce that and hopefully see the remaining grandstands full. But of course, that's only one option of watching the ceremony itself on the hill. Many people are on the front field, and the numbers there have been consistently large the last few years, as I can recall. Different people come for different reasons, and this is all about our national day, to celebrate your national day as you wish to do so. Those who come to St. John's, of course, we have the traditionalists who want to actually witness the laws be promulgated on the hill, both in our native tongue and in English too, and see the petitions, etc. And then you have those who come to celebrate on the Fairfield with their families and participate partake in everything that's Manx. And then there is all the other enhancements around St John's there. You've got the Viking Village, you've got the Global Village in down the Arboretum, and then the Manx tent where you've got a ceilidh and the pipe band at night. So there's lots, you know, for people to enjoy their national day.
With the grandstand getting smaller, there's more room to do something else there. Any plans for that?
No, nothing. It does present the opportunity for a little bit more space behind there on the backfield. And if you've been on there around that, the right after the ceremony, it does get pretty congested. So it does open up an opportunity.
That is President of Tynwald, Lawrence Skelly, talking to John Moss there. Coming up to 20 past five, Castletown commissioners are carrying out a review into the parking provision across the town. Vice Chair John Kringle believes there's a fine balance to make sure residents don't feel disadvantaged, while also looking at introducing regulations and restrictions.
Well, the main thing is we're a historic town. We have a lot of properties in the conservation area. So as a board, we now have to look at where residents can park, where visitors can park. We have a finite number of spaces and areas. So we now have to embark on quite a detailed strategic plan for parking in Castletown.
Why the review and how important will this review be for residents and visitors to the town?
It's going to be very important for both, because we have to get a fine balance here that residents can feel that they're not disadvantaged by having to park miles away from their home, but equally that visitors can have a period of time that they can walk around town, they can go to the shops, they can get a coffee, they can visit some of the historic sites. So it's very important that we look at the areas and we can designate strategically sort of short-term, medium-term and long-term parking. But you can't just do it ad hoc. You've got to have a plan.
It was raised in the meeting about the coach parking and people using coach parking spaces, the lack of enforcement in regulations. Are those the kind of things that you're going to include in your review?
The unfortunate thing is, when you stipulate timescales, to make it work, you have to get this churn of people parking and you have to enforce them. It is a difficult thing and it's not something we want to do, but we have to do it because we have to give everyone a fair crack of the whip at parking and visiting Castletown.
That's Vice Chair of Castletown Commissioners John Kringle talking to LDR reporter Emma Draper. Now, as we continue our countdown to the 2025 Island Games, today we're going to hear from the Isle of Man's archery team that's heading to Orkney. Team member Rhys Moore says, along with hoping for success out there, they've also seen a rise in popularity in the sport locally in recent times.
Well, obviously, we had a great trip to Guernsey in 23. We came back with 6 medals in the end, which is a great result for us. The team slightly slimmed down this time due to various reasons, but the members that are going is a great strong squad. Many of them were in Guernsey, so we're hopeful that we can have some good returns this time as well.
Like you say, 6 medals last time as well, so quite a nice target to try and aim for this time, maybe. No, pardon the pun.
Well, that's always the hope, isn't it? It is such a competitive sport, but we've always traditionally done quite well. 6 was a particularly good year, so let's see whether we can replicate it. We shoot 2-3 times a week in Onchan during the winter, and then we're in Greba during the summer. The clubs come on strength for strength, I think, personally. I'd say our membership numbers are probably up somewhere between 10 and 50%, probably since the last time we spoke, and I'd say the people that are shooting on a regular basis are up notably.
What's maybe been behind that rise in popularity?
And I could always blow on trumpet and say hopefully it was Guernsey, but I think people just always looking for something new to try. It's fantastic in terms of, we always joke, we take them from 9 to 90, so we cover off all age ranges. We've got a great split between men and women, so it's great competitive from that point of view. It's really good for families, so I think it offers an ability that people can be as much of a hobby or as competitive as really they want to be.
One of the things that always seem to jump out every time I ask what do people like most about the Island Games is I get to see friends that I haven't seen for a couple of years from different parts of the world. That community aspect about the games, that must be something that's really quite special about it.
Yeah, I think it is, definitely. I mean, you do get to see people you've only seen once every 2 years. I know, for example, I went away to Scotland last year and I ended up staying with some friends I'd made in the Western Isles and stuff like that, and it does offer that camaraderie. And I think if you go across all the sports, you'll find that to a certain degree that people have made friends and there is that relationship that grows from that, and it just makes it a more relaxed and enjoyable environment. Yes, it's competitive. Yes, as you said, everybody wants to win, but also adds that good level of banter and fun into it, which everybody wants at the end of the day.
That is Rhys Moore from the archery team that's heading to Orkney. You can hear an extended interview with Rhys actually as a sportscast at manxradio.com. The 2025 Island Games is scheduled to take place from the 12th until the 18th of July, which Rob Pritchard, we can now officially say, is this month.
Indeed.
How quickly
it has crept up on
it
all
really
of us.
It really has. I'm just slightly concerned. I know you were up at Jerby for the ARA meeting up there at the weekend and clearly didn't take any sun cream with you. Will you take some sun cream to Orkney?
That's a very good question. That's a very good question. And it's probably something I'll forget to think about by the time I've got there as well. I haven't checked what the weather's like, though, yet.
I'll remind you nearer the time. Anyway, other sports news happening.
Indeed. Well, first off, the finals of the 2025 Isle of Man Golf Championships are getting back underway this evening. The final showdowns actually started on Sunday at the Comus at Mount Murray. However, play was suspended later that day due to worsening weather. Well, Daryl Collister and Tommy Fenlon are battling it out for the men's title, while Sarah Blackman and Kaylee Dawson are facing off for the women's crown. Well, play resumed in the last half an hour at 5 p.m. Elsewhere, swimmer Laura Kinley has been named as the Isle of Man's national flag bearer for the 2025 Ireland Games. The Ireland competitor takes up the role for this year's event, which will be her seventh Ireland Games campaign. Isle of Man Swimming is describing it as a proud moment for Laura and for the team as a whole. And it'll be the second time in 3 years that Kinley has taken up the role as flag bearer after jointly being given the honour alongside Sir Mark Cavendish at the opening ceremony of the 2022 Commonwealth Games in Birmingham. Well, individually, Kinley took 3 medals at the previous Ireland Games in Guernsey in 2023. She took gold in both the women's 100-metre breaststroke and women's 50-metre breaststroke, as well as silver in the women's 100-metre individual medley. Elsewhere, Manx triathlete Will Draper secured a podium finish whilst representing Great Britain in the sport at this year's World Triathlon Long Distance Championships. The Ireland competitor went on to secure third place in the elite men's race at the meeting in Pontevedra in Spain on Sunday the 29th of June. His overall time of 5 hours, 41 minutes and 12 seconds was only 20 seconds off the pace of second place finisher Frenchman Dylan Mannion, who finished it in 5 hours, 40 minutes and 52 seconds. The race was won overall by home athlete Spain's Antonio Benito Lopez in 5 hours, 33 minutes and 33 seconds. And finally, a French city will temporarily rename itself in honour of Sir Mark Cavendish during this year's Tour de France. Châteauroux will be renamed Cavendish City for one day on Saturday the 13th of July when the 9th stage of this year's race finishes in the region. Well, the Manx missile claimed 3 stage wins on the Tour in the town during his racing career, on his way to reaching a historic total of 35 stage wins last year before announcing his retirement from the sport later in 2024.
They missed a trick though, didn't they? So Châteauroux, it could have just been Cavaroo, surely. No?
That is an option. The mayor of the town has actually put up a sign as well that has Châteauroux, and they've actually put Cavendish City underneath as well. So you'll see it. Whoever is passing in and out of Châteauroux will see Sir Mark Cavendish referenced at the very least.
That is quite exciting. We've also got Billy Harris to look out for tomorrow, second match.
We have indeed. Yes, we're waiting to hear what the order of play is going to be. I've actually just been told in the last few minutes the order of play is out for centre court and court one, but we're still waiting to hear what's going to be going on elsewhere tomorrow.
Okay, well, we will bring you the very latest on that when we have it. But that is all from Update tonight. And coming up next, it is Countryside with Simon and Kiri. And among other things, as we heard earlier, they're going to be talking about the impact that farming has on mental health. And at 6 p.m, Chris Kinney will be here with Greatest Hits. From 9, it's John Barker with The Folk Show. And Dave Moore will be with you from 10 with After Hours. So whatever you're doing for the rest of your Tuesday, have a good one. Do enjoy that sunshine while it's still here. And we'll talk to you again tomorrow.